Aren't you interested in learning breakthrough wealth building strategies, such as how to flip a home in less than 2 weeks using other people's money with no real estate license, or how to build a low-cost home-based business? You can discover how to take passive income from any source and invest it into real estate, stocks, or business to become financially independent investing in any market with Residual Roads Business Institute. Collaborate with Andre and other Residual Roads advisors to create a free action plan and start implementing strategies today. Go to www.residualroads.com or email info@residualroads.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. You've been searching for different ways to become financially independent or generate passive income to live out your life's purpose as you've seen others do it, but need insight on how. Well, get excited because here you'll discover the tips and resources to fulfill that need. Andre Stewart has spent more than a decade successfully making it happen for himself and others. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to another episode of Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today we got a special guest, man. I'm excited to bring Stefan on the episode because he's going to talk to us about some alternative asset classes that we can invest in that'll give us a higher return than the stock market. And you know, I'll talk to you guys about crypto and farmland and things like that, but he's going to give us some additional things that we can invest in. So I'm excited. So Stefan, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Pretty good, man. And before we talk, you told me that you were in Australia, man. That's pretty cool. So tell us a little bit more about you're the co-founder and CEO of, you call it alts.co. Tell us a little bit more about that, man. I saw that you guys have like 35,000 subs. So shed some light on us.
Hey, man, we got a lot more than that now. We're growing like crazy. So basically, it's a newsletter, investing newsletter and community, also an investment fund. Okay. So we're going out and we're exploring new kind of esoteric, exotic asset classes that other people just aren't talking about or thinking about that much. We write about them, we explore them, and then we try to find the best assets within those asset classes so that we can acquire them for our Alts One investment fund. So yeah, that's kind of the way to think about it.
So give me a little bit about your background. I mean, that's pretty cool. I like that you guys are fun and you also guys have a newsletter giving us information. Give us a little bit about your background and how you got started with alternative investing in the first place.
I came from the world of micro private equities, so micro buyouts, right? We're talking buying and selling businesses under $1 million. So from that world, I developed a due diligence framework for evaluating the underlying true value of a lot of these businesses and kind of learned how to think about that asset class as an alternative to the stock market.
Okay.
During COVID, like so many other people, you know, kind of became a creator, so to speak, during COVID and just started writing about it, grew the newsletter. Around that time, there was another newsletter that I really enjoyed. It was by this guy named Wyatt. Mm-hmm. Wyatt would go on to become my co-founder. But at the time, we both had newsletters. We were both writing about alternative investing. And I basically just kind of called him up one day and I'm like, hey, man, we're kind of doing the same thing. Like, I really like your style. I don't want to compete with you. Like, why don't we just join forces and like build a company together? Mm-hmm. It's funny because we're both Americans living abroad. So I live in Australia. He's American. He lives in Spain.
Okay.
We never actually met in person. But yeah, we decided to start a company together and kind of fuse our newsletters into one and create an investment fund. And here we are 2 years later.
It's funny because I was going to ask you guys, how did you guys meet? You know, you have a co-founder and generally you don't have a co-founder that you never meet or don't even know him. So you just cold emailed him, I'm assuming, to get his information because you were reading his newsletter.
I think we were just kind of like following each other on Twitter and kind of like talking about the same stuff. Like, it was interesting because I was kind of coming at the world of alternative investing through like micro private equity and mm-hmm. buying and selling websites and digital assets and that kind of thing. But I started to realize there was so much happening with like collectibles and alternative real estate and some of that interesting stuff. And so Wyatt, you know, he was kind of talking about collectibles and he'd actually developed a framework for evaluating collectibles based on their grade and a whole bunch of other factors. And so we were kind of doing the same thing, but coming at it from different angles. Mm-hmm. And that's why we thought it would be great to join up together.
You mentioned buying online companies. You used to work at a company called Flippa. That's an interesting place to work, I'm sure, because you're buying different businesses and selling them online. Tell me a little bit more about your experience working there and what type of business you guys were buying, because that's kind of gave you the idea to start the company that you have right now, I'm assuming.
Flip is a marketplace for buying and selling websites, usually under $1 million, although it can go higher, certainly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that world. I love the kind of Wild West nature of these micro buyouts. And you know, I kind of took a lot of the learnings from there and applied it to this new venture. I mean, one of the ways I've done that is, you know, for us to grow, you mentioned 35,000 subs at the beginning.
Correct.
But yeah, I mean, like it's we're at 75 now. And it's like, okay, well, how do we get there? Yeah. We got a big way we get there is just through newsletter buyouts. So we're going and we're actually buying micromedia companies and other newsletters. So kind of that wheeling and dealing, that's, you know, one thing I learned from my time at Flippa.
That's pretty cool, man. As far as that goes, I did also see that you had a eBay company and you were bringing in like 3 million in sales. Why'd you stop doing that?
The industry I was in was video games. And as I got older, I kind of just fell out of love with the industry. Right. You know, it's like, I just didn't love the industry anymore. It's really what it comes down to. And so I think, you know, that's fine. Like, but if you don't have a passion for something, you kind of owe it to yourself to not, you know, do that or to kind of go where your passions are. And like with all, it's like, I mean, yeah, like I have a huge passion for this stuff. I'll be doing this for the next 10 years. I just love it. So yeah, I'm really happy now.
How long did you do the eBay thing? I'm just curious.
I did it it wasn't a flash in the pan business. I want to say about 6-7 years. And, you know, we had some really great years and then we had some not so great years too during the 08 crash and all that. And we recovered. It never kind of also got back to the glory days that we used to have. And like, the other thing is like gaming's changed a lot. Like so much of gaming, you know, went into mobile gaming, right? And like, we just weren't set up for that. Cause we were like, kind of like, you know, folks that were selling console accessories, repair parts, games, that kind of thing. And so as like mobile gaming took over, it just wasn't who we were anymore. And we didn't really adapt that well. So we actually sold the business on Flippa, believe it or not, which is kind of funny. Years later, I would, you know, be the head of product there. But it was funny because like at the time we sold the business, like a lot of people didn't realize like, oh, you can just buy and sell, you know, small businesses. It's like, correct. Yeah, like now that's like second nature. You got like MicroAcquire, Empire Flippers, a whole bunch of other folks that are doing what Flippa is doing in different ways. You know, Flippa was definitely the first. They were way ahead of their time. And I mean, when I sold the business on Flippa, like I couldn't believe it existed. I was like, wow, this is amazing. We sold in like a week or something like that. And like we got more than expected. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
So I was talking to one of my friends the other day and he was telling me about mergers and acquisitions, which is basically what they do on Flippa.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of specific industry? I'm just giving other people insight if they have businesses that they can sell, because no one really knows about this space. Like it's a private space that people don't know about. Is there anything in particular, like business-wise, that they're trying to sell on Flippa in these type of platforms? Or is it more like you put a business up there that's online and they'll just buy it?
I mean, Flippa is pretty broad that way. Like one of the things that I loved bringing to the company when I was there is my team developed a structure so that you could basically buy and sell a whole bunch of different stuff. It doesn't have to be a website. So Flippa had like the ability to sell domains and apps for quite a while, right? So other digital assets, but we really kind of like blew that door wide open and started to allow basically any sort of digital asset, right? So that could be like a newsletter, for example, could be a YouTube channel, all sorts of different things. I haven't been there in a while, so I don't know exactly where they landed with all of that. But yeah, I mean, the sky's pretty much the limit. That's the way, you know, we saw it at the time. That's for sure.
Man, pretty interesting, man. I like it. So back to you and your alternative investments. Can you give us, I guess, some insight on some good examples on what you think will give us a better return than the stock market would in the alternative investment class?
So I want to be clear. The goal with alternative investing isn't necessarily to beat the stock market year over year over year over year. It's to be uncorrelated with the stock market, which when the stock market is down, we'll definitely have a better chance of beating the stock market. But we have nothing against the stock market. Like over the long run, the stock market is definitely shown itself to be like the best. Basically the best long-term investment for sure. But, you know, if you're just, I mean, the problem with stock market investing, especially now, is that like everyone's just kind of following everyone else. Like all stocks just go up and down together now. Now there's exceptions and, you know, what have you, but it's all just one big line. Even like crypto, which, you know, was supposed to be the original hedge against the stock market, it's basically just a levered play on the S&P now. Like Bitcoin and Ethereum basically just, you know, just a volatile tech stock.
Right.
There's some diversion, but there's not really a ton. So that's where, you know, stuff like artwork comes in and wine and music rights and debt financing and all the sorts of, you know, managed funds and interesting, you know, collectibles and alternative assets that we cover. I mean, this stuff, much of it has nothing to do with the stock market, right? And these markets go up and down as well. And they're somewhat related. Like when you're in a general bear market, they're not going to be flying high. necessarily, but you know, sometimes even through the muck, they're doing well. I mean, look at wine right now. Wine, it hasn't missed a beat. Like wine over the last 9 months is doing much better than the S&P 500. And it's not particularly close. Artwork's doing really well. We also look at really exotic esoteric stuff. So markets you didn't even realize existed. Like what we just bought our first barrels of tequila for our fund, right? So we bought barrels down in Mexico. Yeah, they're going to age 3 years and then we'll either sell them or keep aging them. But we really like tequila as an investment. We're out there buying comic books, vinyl records. Vinyl's awesome. Vinyl holds its value extremely well, especially right now. We are, what else? We just bought the world's second most expensive concert poster. I mean, what is concert poster? But it's an alternative asset class. I mean, it's basically exactly what it sounds like. It's a poster from, you know, the 60s. It's a Grateful Dead poster that we bought. It's in pristine condition. And there's a market for that. And we bought like the holy grail of concert posters and it's extremely good condition. So this is the kind of stuff we're going out and doing.
So then with that being said, what are the components to look for when you're trying to do something like this?
Every market's different, but they all have a few basic kind of fundamental truths in common. Like number one is scarcity, right? So say what you want about NFTs, but I think the big problem is that like they're just fundamentally not that, you know, NFT artwork is fundamentally not that scarce. Like anyone can make it. It's 1,000 variations. It just doesn't have that much value. Like, the high end of the NFT market, you know, does, but most of them just don't. So you need scarcity for sure. I think you need time, right? That's the big thing. And like, that's what people like, you often talk like what makes something vintage, right? You talk about the word like vintage this, vintage that, like, is it because it looks old? Is it because, no, it's just time.
Yeah.
It needs time to show its value and show its worth and prove its value, you know, over the years, over the decades, right? We also, the big thing with collectibles is grading, right? So everything's all about condition. You could have like a comic book that is in horrible condition. You could have that exact same comic book that's in pristine condition. The difference in price is tremendous, absolutely tremendous. I mean, there's a couple of different grading mechanisms and companies doing it, but you know, for example, like the difference between even like a 9.8, right, and like a 9.6 is, you know, tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars, typically with stuff like comic books. And there's grading for all sorts of different asset classes. So grading is important for the collectibles.
Not to cut you off, but the grading part, like, how do you know this? How do you say, for instance, I have a bunch of comic books in my room as an example. What do you do? How do you tell from a grading?
Yeah, so you got to get them graded.
That's the key. Okay, got it.
Like the difference between like a graded and ungraded copy is it's not even in the same ballpark. I mean, if something's not graded, a baseball card, sports memorabilia, if it's not photo matched, the grading and the quality are really, really important, right? So you got to get this stuff graded. You can just send it to the companies. They have a bit of a backlog right now. There's a couple of different grading companies, but you basically just send it off. You ship it off to them. And you wait a few months and they do their work and then they send you the grade and they put it in a container that is like where it's totally protected and it's got the grade on there and it has the serial number and all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, if you're sitting on something good, man, with your comic books, like look for early edition stuff, old stuff. If it's in great condition, get it graded, man. Could be worth some money.
You got any websites that you can, you know, even like my son has some basketball cards, you know, things like that. So do you have a website that someone can go to that it can like enter these things in?
Yeah, absolutely. So like the two big ones to know about are like PSA and CGC. They're both great trading cards. They use a standard 1-10 scale. BGS also uses a 9.5, like a half point. But yeah, I mean, I would go with either, you know, PSA or CGC.
Okay. I'm gonna
Pokemon cards can be worth a lot too.
He has like a folder full of those and we just got like a ton of, what do you call those? Upper Deck? Is it Upper Deck? One of those. So yeah, man, I'm going to definitely look into that.
It doesn't cost a whole lot to get stuff graded. You know, it's like, you know, a couple dozen dollars, you know, $30, $40, $50. If you want fast turnaround, it can be a lot more. But these companies are pretty well, you know, trusted and yeah, definitely worth looking into.
Can you do something in bulk? Say, for instance, he has like 100 Pokemon cards or 100 gaming cards. You just send them in
The problem is the turnaround time. I mean, it right now, like CGC's grading is taking 133 days, right? Oh, wow. So it's just, you don't get it right away, right? But not with everything. Like books, you can get books graded, right? And if they're over, I think like $3,000 in value, you know, you can get those turned around in like 10 days. So they've got a big backlog with cards just because sports cards kind of had a real boom during COVID. And But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things you can get graded. Some stuff just there's no real grading for it yet, or no professional grading. Like, and that's actually kind of interesting. Like, so like vinyl records, there's really no professional grading for it yet. And so that's actually, I don't know if it's helping or hurting. Yeah, I don't know if you have friends that have like old records. Oh man, vinyl is a great alternative asset class. Like, do not throw your records away. Don't sell them for pennies. Like, good records from the old days, man. Oh, hundreds of dollars each. Yeah.
That's what I'm curious about, because my dad has a record collection that I'm probably gonna try to get. So just for instance, let's say give me a good artist from back in the day, right?
Yeah. So like the Beatles are classic, you know, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, or even like, you know, you go back to 90s hip hop. If you have like a pristine like copy of like, you know, Dr. Dre, Snoop, I mean, this are hundreds and hundreds of dollars they're worth. I mean, you can get into the thousands real quick. I mean, it's
really.
Oh yeah, because you know, nerds like me collect them, and like, yeah, it just, they don't make them anymore, you know. Or they'll do reissues, right? But with vinyl, it's all about that first pressing. If you have the original press, right, that's the stuff that is really worth money. And with vinyl, it's interesting because like they're kind of delicate by nature, right? It's not like, you know, other asset classes where they're just sturdier, right? Like with a lot of vinyl records, it's like it's just cardboard sleeve, which can get so easily damaged and all that. And the actual record, the media itself, can get scratches and dust and all that stuff. So like, it's just very delicate. So it's so tough to find something that's in like mint pristine condition. But yeah, oh man, if you have something from the old days that's like original press and mint condition, I mean, you're talking hundreds and hundreds, maybe up to thousands of dollars. No,
so what's the most you've seen someone get for something like what you're talking about right now, or just anything?
We bought a copy of the Beatles White Album that was owned by John Lennon. We got it for $50,000 at auction. So yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like, I mean, anything signed, like we're looking at buying a Queen record right now that was like signed by all the members of the band Queen. I think it's, yeah, $10,000-$15,000, that area. I mean, yeah, it gets, if it's signed and it's in great shape, oh yeah, it's a keeper.
Have you ever thought to yourself, I wish I could get into real estate investing? You can change this as quickly or as slowly as you want to now. Imagine yourself networking and making new connections in real estate globally, or buying an investment property in a market or country that fits your needs. People do. They know what I'm talking about. And now you can too with InvestFAR. Connect and join the network. Remote investing made safe and easy.
What type of alternative investments do you guys like for the fun? Like, I guess give me your top five that you look for yourself.
Yeah, so we actually don't go back to the same five over and over. We try to be as broad as possible. So, I mean, the first thing we bought was a Daredevil comic book, number one, highly graded comic book. Then we bought some graded toys, original Star Wars action figures that were sealed from the 70s. So that was pretty cool. Then we went and we bought some British modern artwork. There's an artist in Britain who named Bridget Riley, who she makes kind of like, she's from the 70s and 80s, but her art looks like it could be produced by a robot today. Like, it's very digital oriented, right? It looks like it just lends itself well to social media today, right? So she's still alive, but she's getting up there. And, you know, unfortunately, in the next decade or so, you know, she probably won't be with us anymore. And so, not to be morbid, but that does add to the value. Yeah. So we bought some of her stuff at auction. We bought concert posters, tequila, whiskey, wine. We're looking at short-term rentals right now. We're kind of waiting for real estate to fall a little bit more before we get into that game. I happen to love short-term rentals, vacation rentals. I think they're terrific. They cash flow like commercial real estate, but they're priced like residential real estate, which is a great combination. I just love that industry. So we're looking at some short-term rentals and some alternative real estate plays in the next couple, probably 6 to 12 months as real estate continues to fall. So yeah, I mean, it runs the gamut. I mean, we get into all sorts of crazy stuff.
So is your fund based out of Australia or is it US based?
It's a US domiciled fund. Yeah.
Okay. And it's funny, you mentioned art. Art took a crazy, it went up like, you know, insane over the past 2 years.
Yeah.
At least in the US, like everybody was selling art. Oh, yeah. It changes value so much. I guess I'm thinking if someone has art or someone has some of the things that you're talking about, we don't know where to go to sell it. I mean, this is my first time hearing about these things like this coming from someone like you. How do we sell this? Like, where do we sell it to? Do you have a website or how do we get this these things? So after we get them graded.
So yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to sell graded merchandise. Tried and true eBay is fantastic, okay, right? I mean, it's been around for a long time. That's kind of like the best starting point. Mm-hmm. But there's all other marketplaces that have popped up. One that we like is called alt.xyz. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of they have a sports card investment fund as well. So they're doing a lot of interesting stuff with sports card marketplace. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of different places. It just depends on the market. I mean, so like for vinyl records, you know, Discogs is the place to go. It's D-I-S-C-O-G-S. Huge marketplace for buying and selling records, CDs, cassette tapes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not too big. I wouldn't get into those if I were you. But yeah, and what's great about a lot of these marketplaces is the data, right? So they've got so much data. You can see all of that data, like what the price history looks like over time. Is it rising? Is it falling? At what rate? What the long-term appreciation looks like? When something's a deal, when something's overvalued, what the average price is, that all this stuff matters, and especially matters for us. I mean, we're looking for stuff that's criminally undervalued in the long run, because it's a 10-year fund on our side. So we're not looking for quick flips or anything like that. Mm. We're looking for stuff that's just clearly going to be valued highly in 10 years. That's why we're getting into stuff that like is long-term play, right? Like, you know, farmland's a great example. We're looking at buying some farmland for the first time. That's not quick flip stuff, right? No one buys farmland and sells it a year later. Like that's like a 15-year hold, you know, maybe 7 to 10, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you need patience to be an alternative investor, truly.
And farmland, where are you guys thinking about buying farmland at?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different platforms that have popped up. Our favorite is AcreTrader. Mm-hmm. So that you just buy and sell farmland shares of farms all over the US and Australia. Farm Together is another one. There's a couple of different platforms, but they're really starting to come into their own. And there's also some interesting platforms that are kind of marrying farmland investing with something called regenerative farming, which is basically, it's really good for the planet. It prevents topsoil erosion. I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but there's some interesting stuff we're looking at there. On the topic of climate change, we're also looking at climate change protected wine as an investment. So basically investing in some vineyards that aren't producing a ton now, but will be producing quite a bit because as the climate changes, that they're going to do better over time. That's more of like a 30, 40 year play though. So we're not totally sure if we're going to get into that, but yeah, there's all sorts of interesting markets out there.
So then Australia, you know what I mean? I know how the economic climate is in the US. What is it like in Australia? I know housing prices, you know, they did the same thing that the US did. They went up in value tremendously. Are you seeing the market start to come down there as well? Or how's it looking?
So, just to preface, Australia is absolutely obsessed with housing to a degree that even as an American, it shocks me. Like, I mean, you think Americans are obsessed? Nah, like Australia is like a step above, man. It's pretty wild. But yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of people that are in the real estate market here. Home ownership is very high. People tend to, over time, become truly quite wealthy just from owning property here. There's a huge influx of folks from China that come and buy up the property. Australia has 30% of Australia is, no one realizes this, but 30% is born overseas, right? So that's twice what it is in the US. So there's a huge immigrants per capita here.
Really?
Oh, yeah. A lot from Asia, a lot from China, right? So in Southeast Asia. So that helps with the real estate. Now, that said, it got out of control, especially in like Sydney or where I live in Melbourne. Yeah, over the past decade, like just absurdly high prices. So it has started to fall for sure. The interesting thing about Australian real estate is that there's no fixed rate mortgages here, 30-year fixed rate mortgages, unlike the US where that's like standard. Mm. Almost everyone's on variable mortgages. So as interest rates go up, those payments really start rising and people feel it. So that's really finally bringing down housing. So yeah, it's not a crash or anything yet, but they're definitely falling. Ultimately, like in the long run, it all goes up with Australian real estate. But yeah, I mean, people are starting to feel the pain here for sure.
I know. So you lived in Santa Barbara for like 15 years. So what you know how foreclosures work. Are you seeing, and with variable interest rates in Australia, have you seen an uptick in foreclosure, or that is not a thing in Australia?
Oh, it can definitely be a thing. I confess I haven't checked the latest data on it. In fact, that's a good thing for me to do this afternoon. I should probably check up on that and see how it's going. Yeah, no, look, foreclosures are definitely on the rise. It's not as, you know, I think, I don't know if we'll ever see what we saw in the US in like 07, 08 ever again. I mean, that was, you know, that was a once in a generation kind of foreclosure kind of opportunity. And you know, we shouldn't be callous about this stuff. This is people losing their homes, and it wasn't pretty for a lot of people, you know. Right. But yeah, I think you're starting to see that in the U.S. a little bit, not a ton. Australia, not a ton yet either. But, you know, who knows? I mean, 2023 could be very interesting.
So then my next question is, I know in Colombia, I invest a lot in Colombia. And in Medellin, you can't really get mortgages. You have to put either 50% down or 60% down, and then they'll finance the rest of it. But other than that, almost 90% of the people that own their homes in Colombia. Is Australia the same way? Can you get a mortgage there or no?
Oh, you can definitely get a mortgage, but it'll be a fat one. It's all there is
to it. So what's the median price for a home in
Sydney? It's down to 1.1 million in Sydney. That's Australian dollars, 1.1 million. Oh, so okay. As an American coming, you know, exchange rate's really helpful right now. So, I mean, you can get a house in Sydney for, you know, $700,000 US, which is not too bad. Mm-hmm. But that's down. So it's fallen from about 1.4 to 1.1 in Sydney. I think Melbourne, it's fallen from about 1.2 or 3 to about 1 million. There are other cities in Australia, but those are the two main ones that everyone looks at. That's fascinating about Colombia. I'd never heard that before. That's really interesting.
That's Latin America. Even in Costa Rica, almost Central and South America is the same. You can't get a mortgage. It's super tough.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
But the farmland there, like you mentioned, I've talked about farmland in Panama City and in Colombia, and they have hectares of where you can buy farmland that already has producing fruit and all kinds of things like that. So it'd be a good place to look if you think about getting farmland, because you can get, like, you know, 20, 30 acres for 2 years ago was 45,000. I checked again. Now it doubled. It's like 70,000, 75,000.
Question is who manages it, but you can't just sit on farmland and hope for it to, you know, I mean, that there's a whole, you're buying a business, right?
You're buying a business. Yeah. They're already turnkey. You just put the money up and they already have like two or three people that manage the farmland and things like that.
That's cool. That's great. Yeah. But most of the farmland platforms I've seen are centered on the US. That is changing though. There's a company in Europe called Landex, which is, it's not actually farmland. It's just rural land in Europe, Eastern Europe, a lot of like Estonia, a lot of the pristine forests in Eastern Europe that you can buy up now. And so, yeah, there's all sorts of opportunities out there. One interesting one that we love to think about sometimes is there's a couple of websites now that let you buy a private island, right? Yes. You can actually buy your own island, but it's honestly, it's like the worst investment ever because you got to develop it. You got to build
all the
infrastructure. Okay. It's like if you've got billions and you got nothing to do for 3 years, and yeah, sure.
But
yeah.
Oh, that'll be me in like 2 years, hopefully. No, I'm kidding. Last question, man. As far as you seem to be tapped into the global economy. Obviously, you live in Australia and you lived in the States and you just moved to Australia 2 years ago. So you kind of know any kind of investment advice, and this is not investment advice, but any kind of recommendations you would give based on the current, you know, state of the economy, where people should invest, alternative investments, land, real estate. What's your thoughts on that?
Look, I just think the key is to just diversify, right? Like if you're doing the same thing as everyone else, like where's your edge, right? Like how are you any different? And like in the long run, it doesn't matter, because if you just put it in equities, you know, I mean, we all know Warren Buffett, like it's just, it'll all work out in the end. It's just in the meantime, how are you really going to be doing anything different? Where's your edge going to come from? How are you going to be any better than the next guy or girl? You know, you're not, if you're just basically investing in tech stocks and like doing what crypto and like doing what everyone else does. So it's really smart to diversify, get into, you know, put a portion of your portfolio into alternatives. Professionals recommend about 30% into alternatives. That does include high-end alternatives, private equity, you know, debt financing, income, private credit, that kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, 30% is kind of like where the smart money has kind of had it for a while. So now we have the luxury to be able to do that, even if we're not billionaires. And it's a great, great time for alternative investing. So I definitely recommend people get into it.
I agree. And my last question too, your fund, you guys look for people to send you things to buy, or you just strictly, you know, raise capital and buy things for your own portfolio?
So we basically just looking to buy. We're not like actively like selling it. We're basically buying and holding for the long run. So the usual person who invests in the fund is someone who, you know, reads our newsletter, who's in our community, who understands that we know our stuff. We've studied a lot of these markets. We understand, we do our due diligence, really take it very seriously. And then when we're ready to pounce, you know, we buy. So it's about a $1.8 million fund. So it's not like a huge fund, but it also allows us to, you know, kind of get into stuff that other funds don't think about or talk about or touch with a 10-foot pole. You know, like we're out there, we're not competing with other funds for these assets, right? Which makes it really cool. So, yeah.
in the return that someone will get, and what's the minimum investment to get into your fund?
Definitely can't promise any returns. That's for sure. Like, you can get in a lot of trouble by promising returns. It's an aggressive fund. We are looking, you know, for aggressive returns. If you go to alts.co/funds, you can kind of get more information there. But in terms of minimum, that's an easy one. So you do have to be accredited. You can be anywhere in the world. Unfortunately, it's a Reg D fund, so you do have to be accredited, but you can be anywhere in the world, and it's a $20,000 minimum. So it's a commitment, right? It's the kind of thing like your money will be, you know, it'll be tied up for a decade, but it won't be correlated to the stock market. It'll be completely independent from what everyone else is doing, and that's the goal.
And for you guys to try to figure out what accredited is, accredited investor is someone with $250,000, right, in assets or more.
Depends on the country. Yeah, in the U.S., it's, I believe, an income of 250 or a net worth of $1 million, excluding your primary residence, which is a key component. I personally think accreditation laws are total BS. I don't want to waste time and get into it. I don't love them, but they are what they are. And yeah, it depends on your jurisdiction. But in the U.S., it's, I believe it's 250 income and or $1 million in net worth, excluding your primary residence.
Correct. Man, I like it. A lot of good information, man. And I shared a lot of stuff like that information on investing on Chester as far as alternative investment. Because I always tell people to get outside of the country. Whatever country you're in, it's good to get your assets in another country. Because if something happens, right, then you're stuck with that. Say something happens in the U.S., what do you have now? Right? You don't have any kind of cash available anywhere. You don't have any assets anywhere else, and you're screwed. So
absolutely. I mean, honestly, like, I'm not a doomsayer. Like, I think the U.S. will be fine in the long run. We're going through a little tough time maybe right now, you know, but it's never unwise to diversify. Right. I totally agree. I think that investing in other countries is extremely wise, you know, not to pump Australia at all, but like, it's a safe country, one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Economy is doing great. People are happy. It's a good place to, you know, to consider investing in. That's for sure.
I might have to link up with you after this. Get some information on those foreclosures you're going to look up.
Let's go in together, man. Let's do it.
I'm all about it. Oh, man. Last question.
You know what's funny here? You know what's funny in Australia, real quick? When you buy a house, it's all done through auction. Literally auction. Yeah, like old school, there's an auctioneer. Uh-huh. Yeah, 100%. There's like people gathered around and it's like, you know, 600,000, 620. No joke. That's how almost everyone
every house. Buys.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Insane. Yeah.
You got to go to a lot of auctions to just get one house. Huh?
Yeah. Oh, you lose a lot. That's for sure. People cry. I mean, it's like a big deal.
You know what? I'm going to sign that task to you and I'll just send you the money. How about that?
Let's do it.
All right, man. Top three books you recommend. I always got to ask this question. Some people don't read, but I like to ask, you know, you got to this level. You had to do it through reading books.
Oh, man. You know what's funny? There's a couple that come to mind. What one I really loved was by Bill Bryson, and it was called A Short History of Nearly Everything. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a book about all the stuff you should have learned in science class and in elementary school, but we all just forget, right? Like, there's just so many like fundamental things about the world that like we kind of know a little bit about, but don't really know like a ton for being adults, you know? This book was awesome in that it basically just explained all those concepts like you were five, and mm-hmm. it made it super fun. You know, I think that was definitely one that really affected me personally. Another one was a guy named Poe Bronson years ago wrote a book called What Should I Do With My Life? It's not what you think it is. It's not like a self-help kind of book. It's basically just a bunch of stories about different people that took different paths in life, how they got into those paths. Some of them are interesting. Some of them are kind of boring, but it just shows you like, you know, most people just don't really have like a plan, you know, and they just kind of fall into what they're doing. But it all makes sense in the long run. And it kind of gave me the confidence to just go and start a company. I thought that was a really important book for me in my life. The third book I'm actually going to balk. It's not a book. It's just newsletter. So obviously like we're a newsletter. The newsletters are a huge part of what we do in our life. So I don't actually read a ton of books anymore. I read a ton of newsletters, just an absolute metric ton of newsletters. I can give you some of my favorites, but we're running out of time here. Maybe I'll pop them in the chat after and I'll send you some, and if people are interested, they can check them out.
Sounds good, man. I thank you for coming on and hope to have you on again sometime, man.
Likewise, would love to come back. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, man. Take care.
See ya.
Aren't you ready to start a business or grow your real estate investing portfolio? If you answered yes, allow Andre and the expert advisors at the Residual Roads Business Institute to fast track and put you on a path to full-time investing. The greatest transfer of wealth in our lifetime is occurring over the next few years, and you can take advantage if you know what to look for.
In order to be successful at real estate investing, you need to learn how to leverage your current resources to generate quick money, big money, and retirement money. Let Residual Roads advisors craft a plan to get you through these phases using little or no money in 6 months or less. Don't wait for a job. Create one for yourself and others. Go to residualroads.com for mentorship, and for our free course, go to residualroads.thinkific.com.